Okay, we're just coming up on 7:30, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. I'm going to mute everybody now, and you will not have the ability to unmute yourself other than Seb and other co-hosts on the call. So Seb, you can go ahead and unmute yourself now as well. So welcome all to the January meeting of the Ottawa PC News Group. As I understand it, we have some newcomers with us today, some guests. Guests are always welcome at Ottawa PC News Group meetings. And if you want to join, we'd be happy to have you join it. You can do it through our website. Later on it'll probably be in a couple of days, the audio track from tonight, as well as an abbreviated version of the deck, will be going up on our website later on. In terms of other announcements that we have going on right now, the nominations for the Board of Directors has closed. There are only 8 nominations, so the incoming board will be looking to nominate somebody to the 9th position. If you're interested in that, then please, by all means, you can talk to anybody on the Board of Directors if you want to become part of the board. With that, I think that we can turn this, get going with tonight's meeting. So this evening, we're very fortunate to have Constable Sebastian LeMay from the Ottawa Police Service as our speaker. He's been an officer with the Ottawa Police Service for 14 years. He's in his 7th year as a community police officer in Lower Town, Byward Market, and Sandy Hill neighborhoods, acting as a liaison between the community and the Ottawa Police Service. He regularly follows up on problems that patrol officers might not be able to resolve, meets with residents, business owners to share some crime prevention strategies, attends meetings with resident association businesses and other stakeholders, and meets with different groups to offer presentations on various safety and security topics, such as this evening's presentation titled Fraud 101, Beware of Scammers. Everyone is muted during the presentation. You can use the chat window to make any comments or questions. And also after the main presentation, the microphones will be opened up so that people can audibly turn on their mics and ask questions or make comments at that point in time. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Constable LeMay, and you can take it away and you can share your screen anytime you want.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you again for this invite to present your group. I also want to give a special thanks, Chris. I believe it was one of your members that made reference to this presentation that I offered to another group. So to that person, thank you. Whether you were an attendee of my presentation, Carol, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. For me, it's really important, my role in what I do. It is prevention. It is education. And for crimes like fraud, I believe that that is the greatest weapon that we have. Unfortunately, we hear too many cases of people falling victim to fraud. They are difficult crimes to investigate, which we will see a little further. And ultimately, if a person has been deprived of their identity or a large sum of money, that is something that they will, unfortunately, sometimes never retrieve or never get back. So Chris and I started exchanging around August. I was at the time off on parental leave. I have a 15-month-old daughter, which explains the bags under my eyes, and also have a 5.5-year-old son. These types of presentation were very lucky, obviously virtual. I worked my full day today. I actually had training the whole day, and I'm here talking to you from my basement. So I've briefed the whole family that there should be no interruptions, but if you hear some yelling in the background, which should not happen, just be cognizant that I'm talking to you from home today. So I will share my screen. And I was also telling, I believe I told Chris, this is a presentation that I would have no excuse to stumble on or not be able to find my words. I've offered it numerous times, and in particular recently it appears that it was quite of interest for many groups. My only excuse would be that I got up at 4:30 for this morning for this training that I was on. We have to requalify yearly for our use of force, so firing range and all that stuff. So it was a very pleasant day, but it was a early morning start. Assuming it's good, just a thumbs up from you, Chris, for the screen share. Everything's good. Perfect. Let's go. So fraud 101, again, this is the basic. This is based, we received this as community officers from our fraud unit. Keep in mind, folks, fraud is always evolving. I'm sure that when we dive into the conversation, the Q&A, you folks might share some stories, either that you've witnessed yourselves, you've, hopefully not, but potentially fell victim yourselves, and or you know somebody. It's these people, the scammers that we use, the unofficial term, unfortunately, that's their full-time job. So all they do is think about the next scam and how they can get you as a victim. So this should be a good coverage of many of the most popular scams that we have out there. So what is fraud? Fraud is obviously, as I mentioned earlier, it's a crime under the Criminal Code of Canada. Fraud is taking something by deceit, where the person is often tricked. They're entering the situation, they're thinking that they're going to get something of it by means of a false promise or things of that nature. And we'll see on the next slide kind of what that represents. So again, there's a willingness to offer either banking information, personal information, and or quite simply direct sums of money. So these two cute characters would be the image of the difference between a theft and a fraud. I would say the example, you have your bicycle on your gallery and somebody steals it, they leave with it, you know right away that you were deprived of that good, that you will likely never be able to use it again. Whereas in fraud, again, there's this false pretense, false promise. You're either entering a contract, you're providing your information to win a draw or a cruise or things like that. So again, we have the character on the right who's very confident that she's, struck the best deal and everything's going to be okay. So again, the fraudster's goal is ultimately, most of the time, goes back to money. So whether it's the banking information, obviously for money, whether it's property, we'll see some schemes where fraudsters get away without paying for something that you might be selling. What will they do? They will resell that item and essentially obtain money. Finally, the personal info or identity. Again, they'll create a false account under your name, and then they'll be able to use that line of credit, use that loan, or whatever it is that they use your information for. And ultimately, gift cards and iTunes cards, those are less common. But people that do fall victim to that and give those cards, again, that has a monetary value. The fraudsters can buy something with it, and it's very difficult to trace. So the three obviously main methods that we have, that the fraudsters have for committing fraud, computer and internet. And it saddens me a lot. Obviously, we have the benefit of having almost 100. Can we make 100 participants? We're at 74, which is pretty good. So we have the benefit of having all these people, tune in from their computers, listen to this presentation. But again, it comes with the issue that it can be used to commit fraud. Probably our highest rate is based on computer and internet fraud. Then we have the phone call. I think, I won't even ask for raise a hand or a vote. I think everybody here has gotten that call, automatic dialing machine, oftentimes a foreign language, or we can't really understand what's being said. And essentially, usually it's a threat that the National Revenue Agency is after us. If we don't pay such an amount of money, we'll be in prison. So we'll see later why that never happens. And then the last one we see a little bit less, especially with COVID these past couple of years. I think most people have, ceased any type of soliciting, whether it be legitimate or not, door to door. But we have seen cases of somebody knocking at somebody's door and either trying to get their information, possibly on a for an agency or for money. And we'll talk about contractors also that can commit the fraud by way of going door to door. So this is a list of what we'll go through in the next couple of slides. Phishing scams, that pertains again to false forms on the internet that you might be led to believe are actually true, and you enter your information, but then that information goes to obviously the fraudsters. The classic Canada Revenue Agency, there's either the tax, you owe taxes and you'll be arrested, order and say, hey, miraculously, we owe you an amount of money and we want to send it to you as soon as possible. Please give us all your bank information. Charity scam, that's what I was looking for that door-to-door. So again, knocking at your door, hello, Counselor Foundation, we'd like to give some money. Please give some money, it's a good cause, blah, blah, blah. Renovation and construction scam, that's another one we'll talk about in more details. Again, those sales or those believed to be transactions, which again, the fraudsters have a way of not paying somebody. Lottery scam, same kind of thing. You miraculously won a prize for a draw that you didn't enter. The romance scam, that has to do with either dating sites or Facebook, where somebody, the scammer, communicates in a way, in a romantic way, says that they have interest in the potential victim, and then they end up asking for money and money transfers and things of that nature. Identity theft, again, we'll see what that has to do with, but I think everybody can understand that it's any type of, again, information, personal information that's taken from you, such as name, date of birth, address, phone number, social insurance number, and that obviously is used to recreate your identity and, again, create false accounts and obtain money out of it. So the phishing scams, again, there's a notion of cloning or copying a form that, you know, and we'll see some examples on the next couple of slides. So a form that really appears legitimate and that, you know, if you're not paying attention to how you got to that form or how that form got to you, then you're essentially entering your information onto a form, but that will be used for ill-intended people. So again, there's different variations of this, but in essence, that's what it is. And then, so again, the objective of that internet fraud and of that recreation of that form is to get you to input all your information and then use them, including a password, as we can see here, in order to eventually genuinely access your accounts and get the money out. So this is an example of something that our fraud unit has investigated. So I just want you to kind of have a quick look at it, and we'll discuss a couple of issues with that one. So, you know, typically we might have received some correspondence from our banking institutions. I think for the most part, they are sent again via the mail for that kind of security aspect. But if you were to receive an email from your bank account, I think we can identify a couple of obviously mistakes that are very uncommon for a professional institution such as a bank. So again, first off, the email address, so Scotiabank, but then your address is a little complicated, a little convoluted, and towards the end there, and you would be the experts to tell me what it's called exactly, but the domain or the name for the .com is obviously something that is solely irrelevant to a bank like Scotiabank. Then we see a typo in the transfer. It says transfer. And then from your account, you have a number there. This is very likely to be a fake account number. So, and again, in the method of phishing or spoofing, when those emails are sent, they're sent to hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps millions worldwide, whatever, any email address that the fraudster could have access to. So if we rewind to the beginning of this, your first red flag might be Scotiabank. Never dealt with Scotiabank. I have all my banking with RBC, all my, you know, everything, name it. It's all with RBC. Never even took a loan with Scotiabank. Like, this is nonsense, right? So this should be your first kind of setback. But that being said, because the email is sent to so many people, they will, kind of casting your line like a fisherman, you're going to get some fishes that are going to bite because they're going to be like, oh, Scotiabank. Yeah, that's my bank. And I'm clicking through, right? So again, what do we have? We have someone tried to access your Scotiabank account, blah, blah, blah. Attempt was unsuccessful. Your funds are frozen. Click on this link. And again, I draw your attention to the link at the bottom of the page. www.scotiabank.com- and a bunch of letters -, and a bunch of other letters and numbers. So again, it's very unprofessional looking in my opinion, and that should be another indication that there's an issue there. So we see another example here, similar RBC, Royal Bank. The notion that I want you folks to be attentive to is the notion of stress or of pressure. Subject line, 24 hours for confirmation. Again, there might be some urgency if your bank, your bank card was illegally used and they have frozen the funds, but in no time would you have such a pressure based on time. What fraudsters are trying to do with that, and we'll see it in different frauds as well, is that obviously they want to isolate you as a victim. They want to create that stress. They want to create that anxiety, which leads us to commit quick and quick actions without thinking. And then also it prevents you from double checking, right? Calling your bank, speaking to your spouse, calling a friend and saying, "Listen, I just got this. Like, this is weird. Like, I need a sounding board here. What's going on?" kind of thing. So that should be another red flag. And again, a couple of numbers there that, the 11333FEJ, like you kind of got to ask yourself the questions like, okay, does this have to do anything with my personal information? Yes or no? And even if the answer is yes, you should still be cautious, right? This might be a case of, for whatever reason, which, again, sky's the limit in terms of what they can do. Maybe they have gone through your mail, weeks, months ago, and they've secured that information somehow, and, who knows? So always be careful, but definitely if none of the information there rings a bell for you, that should be a quick automatic delete. Don't even open anything. Don't even be curious to see what's going on. A little bit of an anecdote. I have some colleagues that are curious at times with those phone calls for the NRA, and they go through the prompts of pressing one, and they speak to an agent, and they waste their time for 5, 6, 7 minutes, and then they call them out saying, "Listen, I'm a cop and I know what you're up to, and get a life," kind of thing. I'm not game. I'm a bit of a chicken when it comes to that, and I would never do it. My interpretation, though, is that it's great crime prevention as police officers, right? Like, we are taking up the time of a fraudster, and by playing with them, they're not, that 5 or 6 minutes, they're not targeting another victim. Anyways, quick anecdote about the shenanigans that some police officers do. So we'll dive in a little bit more to this file here. So essentially, running you through it again, Royal Bank of Canada. We spoke about why you should not click on the link. Say you would click on the link. So personal verification link, third line from the bottom. You click on that, and you see this, and you're like, "Oh, I'm an RBC client. This looks like a genuine, legitimate RBC page. I recognize some of the information here. I'm confident that I'm going to go ahead and input my information," right? So again, these fraudsters, they have a lot of time. They'll go on the RBC websites. They'll have great IT consultants, or they'll be IT people themselves. They'll be able to recreate the whole web page. But again, it's to their benefit to draw information into their personal database. Then whatever the first page was, you enter the required fields, you click yes, you're good to go. Next page, okay, this is, still seems legitimate here. We got some account confirmation, we got the usual and, information that's being asked and stuff like that. Even down to the personal verification questions, right? So at this point, you could pretty much enter, anything, and they wouldn't check because, again, it's a reproduced form that they're using. And so this would essentially be how your personal information would be compromised, because again, all that information and the following, if you click on continue, if they do have the courtesy of saying, "Thanks for your information," or whatever it is, however it is that they end this, but essentially this would be an unfortunate situation where somebody would have given their information. So again, most of us are familiar with the CRA refund scam. I personally have only gotten it via phone call, but we have an example here that it could happen via email. So again, no screen capture or image, but we can all picture, again, a very unprofessional looking email, a couple of typos, and essentially a link which, obviously has nothing to do with the CRA. If there are any refunds to be given by the CRA, it's always done through the mail. I believe they do have a feature where you can register for direct deposit. But that would be something that you would have proactively done and you would have been aware of. And there would be no notion of you needing to, go through the steps that are introduced in this slide. So again, a link to click, which is very weird. The other thing that they'll do is that they'll say that the refund amount is a very specific amount. So we have the example of 458. You know, they keep into consideration that if they were to say $500, this might, you know, sound some bells for some people that would be tempted to accept, right? They'd be like, they might second question the amount and the legitimacy, whereas by going, they can even throw some, you know, pennies in there, 458 and 21. Who knows, right? So little nuances that, again, these people have all day long to think about, and they'll insert in those frauds. So again, then you have that link, you have that money, you're super excited, you're thinking, okay, how can I get that money? And then boom, there goes the phishing method of the click on the deposit to your financial institution, and then all your info that you input is being stolen by the fraudsters. So again, CRA does not send emails to people. It's always done via regular mail. And again, we spoke about it a little bit, refunds in terms of, you know, give us some money, or give us your bank information, we'll give you iTunes cards or gift cards in exchange. Obviously, that would never be a way of proceeding by the CRA. So Kijiji and Use Ottawa, for those of you that are on Facebook, there's Marketplace, so many sites that you can post items that you want to sell. Essentially different methods, but one of them would be, an overpayment. So again, the person might say, you know, they might pay with a check, which initially should be a big no-no because you can't, you know, that check might bounce. But depending on the means of payment or the alleged payment, they'll say, I overpaid you. Or actually they might do it by e-transfer or things like that. They might say, you know, I overpaid you, just give me back the extra money and, you know, we won't talk about it anymore, right? So then what they would do is cancel their initial payment, and that sum of money that you gave them back would essentially be the money that they would take away from you. And in addition, if you were the seller of an item, then you also lost that item, which you, again, referring to our friendly character initially, you thought that you were gaining something out of it, but you actually end up losing and the item and that amount of money that you offered. So again, if you do, there's a method here. If you do accept a check from a stranger, I personally have conducted various sales. The only check that I will accept, and I forget the name for it exactly, but it's the one that you can go at the bank. It gets kind of that seal of approval saying, yes, this person has the money. Essentially, at that point, you're receiving the money from the bank. I think I did it once when I sold a vehicle because it was a bigger amount. But in most cases, you should go with, either paper money, you know, the good old paper money. If you do accept an e-transfer, again, be cautious. Make sure that you've received or that has been sent to you the exact amount of money and that you're able to accept it before you turn over the item. On that note, I haven't included it yet in this presentation, but it was recently announced by the Ottawa Police. We now have safe trade locations. So if you are going to be selling a Kijiji or a marketplace with a stranger, we recommend instead of having this person come to your residence or having you go elsewhere, to do it at one of our three main police stations. So the one on Elgin, the one in Orleans, 10th Line, and the one in Canada on Huntmore. So they're baby blue parked or colored parking spaces. Again, video surveillance officers in the area. Essentially, if you're inviting somebody to a police station to conduct a transaction, at that point, you're pretty much 99% sure that they're not, you know, they're not up to no good, right, essentially. So this is a new initiative, and again, I'll try to multitask later, unless Chris has found it already, but it should be pretty obvious on our Ottawa Police website, but I'll try to find the link for you and send it later. And again, if you can't make it to a police station, you know, I've had people come to my residence and buy things, hand-to-hand transaction of money. Again, there are different safety tips and safety considerations, and most of the time it boils down to your gut feeling, right? If there's something that's telling you that something's off about this transaction, again, it's up to you to cancel it or, you know, kind of reconsider doing it altogether. the romance scam. So this is one that, you know, they're all very unfortunate. There's a victim, there's somebody that loses money. But for me, this one and the grandparent scam, which we'll see later, are pretty devastating because it involves emotion and involves like a lot more than simply losing the money. Excuse me. So again, I mentioned it. It's mostly via all the cases that we're aware of were done through computer, creating either an anonymous profile in terms of sites for meeting people. Again, it will usually start slow, like any normal relationship would. There'd be exchange of basic information, and then there'd be kind of that insinuation that again, from the fraudster's perspective, they're looking for a little bit more in a relationship. Surprise, surprise, they live on a different continent. They're, you know, they need a bus ticket, they need a plane ticket, they need to have their visa paid for, stuff like that. So again, these fraudsters, they have to be very patient because you don't simply ask for a couple of hundred or a couple of $1,000 without developing that relationship. But they will eventually ask for money. They will make excuses. They will, sky's the limit in terms of what they can think of. They might be a real physical person. They might present themselves as I am on the screen now and say, oh, yes, dear person, I'm very much in love with you and I want to come and, meet you in person and I want to do, continue a relationship with you. Or they might even simply, take example, male fraudsters using a female's profile photo, maybe videos that they found on the internet, presenting that to a, male subject or somebody that might be interested to start a relationship with a female. So all the while the person is actually, falling in love with somebody who doesn't even exist, right? Or who doesn't even present as a real person. So again, really playing with the emotions here, which is very, very unfortunate. Again, these are frauds where when emotions are involved and the money starts being transferred, we've unfortunately heard of cases where friends, family will say, no, this person does not exist. You need to stop. But the person is the victim is so far in and they're so involved emotionally, romantically, or so they believe, that they'll continue giving money. So these are very, for us as police officers and whether it be investigators or frontline patrol officers responding to calls, are very challenging for us to approach and again to stop. The Microsoft scam, I think this might be a little bit from a dated presentation. I haven't heard of any cases per se, whether it be Microsoft or just a random fraudster kind of trying something. Essentially what this would be is you receive a phone call. Hello, Mr. Taylor, this is blah, 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 technician. Great news, we have a free service. I can ensure that your computer is good to go, that you have no viruses. All I need is remote access. It's free or it's very low charge or whatever else. So depending on your background, where you work, you're probably familiar with your own company's IT service. I know ours is great. Again, I call up. I can't figure out how to do this. Okay, what's your computer number? Okay, click on this box. I'm in. And then they do whatever they want, right? These are my people. I know them. I trust them. They obviously work and represent the Ottawa Police Service. But if it's a random person calling you, again, red flag. Why am I getting this call? How did I even register? Did I make a request? Did I go to whatever the computer stores are now, Best Buy or all those things? Do I have this service that I should be using? If I don't have a need for the service, if I think this is fishy, again, you hang up, you put an end to the conversation. There's no reason to continue any further. So again, perhaps credit card number to charge for the service, but again, simply saying it's a free service, but once they're in, they have access to everything and then they can make thousands of dollars would be another approach to this, right? Everybody likes free stuff, but in this case, you could end up losing a lot. The CRA, Canada Revenue Agency, again, you owe X amount of money. If you don't pay now, you'll get arrested. I don't recall any warrants ever being issued by the CRA in Ottawa for unpaid amounts. Excuse me. you know, it's happened to some of us, maybe being late in payments and stuff like that. But never will an arrest be made in regards to that type of money. And again, these fraudsters, for some reason, well, the reason is the difficulty in tracing that. But in terms of like gift cards, iTunes cards, like that will never be a form of payment ever that the CRA will request. And again, an arrest under sums owed for the CRA, I think, would be a case that we would all hear about in the news, and it's greater than only money unpaid to the CRA. We're talking like massive tax evasion, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. So again, this would never be something that you should entertain. Grandparent scam, another one that I really despise. Have grandparents myself, love them, but again, I wouldn't be surprised that they would fall. Hopefully they don't, because I did make them aware of this. But it's easy to fall into this pattern, because again, it plays with the emotions. And I'm hoping we should be able to play the a nice video we have at the end where the actor kind of depicts this. But very quickly, it'd be a call where I, the fraudster, would say I call Chris, and you know, I simply, you know, dial this number, and I'm like, hey grandpa, it's me. And then Chris would be like, who is it? Why, you know, your grandson, your favorite grandson, Sebastian. Yeah, that's right, Sebastian. Yeah, so listen, I'm in a bit of a pickle. I got arrested, I got in a car accident, blah blah blah, whatever the reason is. They say that they need money now. So if you see what I did there, I didn't know that Chris's grandson was named Sebastian, but by way of playing the dialogue, I ended up getting Chris to give me the name, and then I just played along like I was that that character, right? So fairly easy, fairly innocent way to get the name. But again, if you're a grandparent, you care for your grandchildren, as soon as you hear, you know, the name of somebody you know, or that you present the name of somebody you know, and that is being received by the fraudster, and that is being used, then that's where kind of the game starts, and it's very unfortunate. So again, there'll be a notion of emergency. I need the money now. I need it quick. Particularly with the grandparent scam, if you remember from earlier, I was talking about the stress and the anxiety, but I was also talking about the isolation. So I need the money now. You can't talk to anybody. In fact, they might even throw in the good old, you know, it's a secret, needs to stay between you and I. I'm very embarrassed. Please don't call my parents. In fact, you cannot call my parents for whatever reason. And then this will either be, okay, I'll can you note down a number of a bank institution and wire me the money? And we've even seen cases recently of the fraudster alleging to be, caught in a bad situation, saying my lawyer is going to attend your residence. Can you remind me your address again? Oh, yeah, that's right. 123 Main Street. Okay. Yeah, the lawyer is going to be there. He's got a white car. You know, super nice guy. Just, you know, give him the envelope with, you know, $5,000 and I'll be good, right? I'll be grateful forever kind of thing. So, again, quick, isolates the victim. They don't really have time to ask around. Again, and very, very unfortunate, because it plays with the emotions. And, you know, any victim of fraud, I reiterate, it is unfortunate. It's somebody that loses money. But I've unfortunately heard of cases where, you know, these are people that are older, perhaps retired, you know, just living off of their pension. So in terms of them losing money, again, it's even more unfortunate that, you know, that somebody who could afford to work to get it back kind of thing. So again, one that has been on the rise recently, the Auto Police has issued some media releases pertaining to the prevention of this, because we've seen an influx of these calls in the past couple of months. One thing that I would stress, for you, if you fall victim to a scam, whether it be the grandparent, any other, I also, in this presentation, ask you to be ambassadors, right? As community officers, as a community officer, I try to be available for as much people as I can, deliver this presentation to as many people as I can, but, you know, obviously, I want to be able to reach everybody in Ottawa. So tell your friends, tell your family, this one in particular, but again, all the others, in case there's anybody that says, hey, I got a super good deal off of, you know, whatever. Because again, education and prevention goes a long way when it comes to this. And what I wanted to say about this too is there should be no shame in saying, okay, I messed up, but I need to talk to somebody. I need some help here. So whether it be reporting it to the police, which we obviously always strongly advocate for, but even talking to you or your loved ones, people that you trust, and saying, okay, I need your help, or I'm thinking of doing this, or whatever the case might be. So really, to destigmatize that, victim shaming and stuff like that should never be the case for frauds. So two more frauds here. So we have the cruise scam. So again, random phone call. Hey, you want a cruise? Congratulations. Who wouldn't want to go on a cruise? I would want to go on a cruise right now. So of course you're tempted. You're listening. You're like, okay, what's up? Like, what is this? Usually the caveat for this is, you want a cruise. It's worth $10,000 and they'll sell it. Like, you'll go here, you'll go there. It'll be majestic. It'll be great, but you have to pay such a tax or such a fee. $500, that's nothing compared to the $10,000. You accept. Okay, good. Credit card number, boom, boom, whatever the case may be, right? So, again, like for any other fraud, ask yourself, right? Did I enter a draw? It's not impossible. It could be the case. If I didn't enter a draw, was it to win a cruise? Was it to win something else? That notion of paying a fee to win a prize, I've never entered any contests or won any prizes where that was the case. So again, that should be something that should be kind of second question and perhaps argued a little bit if you did enter a draw. But the likelihood that those two coincide, that you entered a draw and that you're being victimized for a fraud, would be very not likely, but just kind of things to consider. The credit card, again, I've had my credit card compromised, but usually it's pretty directive, right? The company will call you because they know your information. So, hello, am I speaking with Mr. LeMay? Yes, this is the bank. This happened. Can you confirm that your address is this and that? So they'll name you the information they have and they'll confirm that they're speaking with the right person, right? If they just call you and they say your credit card's been compromised, can you tell us your credit card number? And can you tell us this and can you tell us that? They're obviously going fishing here for some information that they're going to use against you. And any doubt when there is this contact that is initiated by somebody else, by a stranger, there's nothing preventing you from terminating the phone call and making the phone call yourself. Oh, it's Joe Blow from MasterCard. Okay, yeah, no, that's good. I don't believe who you are, so I'll call MasterCard myself, right? So you hang up, you find on MasterCard's website or on your last invoice, customer service phone number, you call. You'll probably be on hold for 20, 25 minutes, but at least you'll know that you're doing the right thing. Once you speak to somebody, you say, I am such and such. This is my client number. I just received a call from somebody identifying themselves as Joe Blow saying this happened. And usually the agents will be pretty, used to it, unfortunately, and they'll look up your file and they'll reassure you that everything is okay, that you've probably just dodged a fraud, which is a very good thing. Lottery scam, same thing as the cruise. Who wouldn't want to win money? But again, there's that notion of, you've won this large amount of money, but you have to pay fees to release it because of, customs or border services or whatever. And again, same question you got to ask yourself. Okay, I just won this massive amount of money. I didn't enter any ballots. I didn't, participate in any draws. So what is this, right? Like this sounds like a fraud. So it most than likely is a fraud in this case. Charity scam, another that's, has to do with the emotions, door to door, is the most common way that we've had it. But again, you could get one of those emails where, looks like a legitimate, counselor for a foundation, heart and stroke foundation or whatever, and ask you for information and stuff like that. But in this case, we are talking about the door to door one. They will often present themselves, with a fake badge or a fake ID. They could even have, gotten a t-shirt from the foundation itself and they'll be wearing it and whatever else, right? Usually your alarm there should be the high pressure sales tactic. If, I'm going out representing whichever charity and I would like somebody to donate money, my focus should be on giving exposure to the cause, answering questions. Maybe at the end of my spiel saying, by the way, if you'd like to donate, I have this form. But you as an individual, if you don't feel comfortable, you saying, I wish not to give money here on my doorstep, but I will follow up on your website. from somebody who's legitimately representing the charity that should be accompanied by an immediate understanding and just saying, oh, really appreciate your time. And yeah, by the way, this is our website. And then again, be cautious with that. This is our website. Make sure that it is a legitimate website. You know, we have the good old Google that usually directs us to the appropriate website. But always be mindful of those red flags that we reviewed, right? So again, you can always say no and say that you will reach out to the charity yourself, because in light of the information that was presented to you, you're not wanting to give money to that charity. The renovations or construction, so that is often a door to door, or you're on your front step, drinking your tea or you're cleaning your laneway. And then this random person shows up and says, oh, by the way, I do clean snow. I can offer you my services. I see that the snow is pretty heavy and everything else. So this random approach, it could happen. It could be a legitimate snow removal person that's in the area. But again, I would argue that if the price is too good to be true, if there's a lot of pressure for you to either give money, sign whichever form, whichever contract, those should be, again, red flags. And it should, any person that we hire like this should always be accompanied by good research of, again, background references, things like that, right? So we all have, larger companies that we see in our neighborhoods that we know, but doesn't say that we shouldn't encourage people that work by themselves. But in that case, they should have references that they can share. The other one that we'll see for construction is, we're just doing one of your neighbors, around the block as residents. We have extra material. We can do this job for such an amount of money. We see that one for the asphalt, so the redoing of laneways. And sometimes, and I believe, not debating, but having a conversation with a colleague and saying, well, is it really fraud? Because ultimately, they might come with the expired or the old batch of asphalt. They'll just throw it on the laneway and they'll leave. So is it really fraud, or is it just offering a poor service? But when it comes to the intent of a fraud, so their intent was to use expired or old asphalt and really mess up the job. It was presented to me that this would constitute a fraud. So again, that can happen. Our contractor, again, you might have found on a website, you might believe is legitimate. They haven't really offered any references, but you decide to go ahead and they ask for money up front to pay for materials. I've known contractors that have done that. They were very legitimate. The job was very well done. So it's not impossible for the smaller companies to need to do that based on the extent of the work that they have to do. But again, I would definitely accompany that by, a thorough reference check. Probably even portfolio of the work they've done and anything to really ensure yourself that you're not getting yourself into a situation where you're giving this person money and they're either never returning again or always asking for more money than they actually need, right? So again, be cautious and do your research. So identity theft, again, very, very unfortunate. So it can happen by way of different methods. We saw a couple of them with those fake forms. The going through the mail is less common, but anybody should always be very cautious of any documents with your personal information, your social insurance number. Very fortunate in my home, I have a fireplace, and guess what? Any sensitive paper goes right in that pile of papers that I'm gonna burn. A shredder is a good investment if you wish to get rid of those papers with sensitive information. And then somebody who steals a wallet, a purse that steals from a vehicle, might their objective might be to steal to get the identity. And again, figure out how they can get money out of it. So again, phone calls, we talked about it, saying, this happened to your credit card. Can you give me your credit card number? Can you give me your name, social insurance number, and things like that? And then the information, I'm a victim myself of Desjardins, more common in Quebec. There was a big thing about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's a dishonest employee, right? So what can you do? Desjardins got back and they offered, some sort of compensation, some sort of protection mechanism, which we'll see later. It affected hundreds of thousands of clients. So very, very unfortunate. And you know, when it came out about Desjardins, everybody was outraged, but it's pretty much happened to any large bank institution at some point. And I think that any single case reminds the leadership of that institution to obviously do a very thorough job in terms of background check for their employees, and perhaps regular kind of maintenance and surveillance of their employees to make sure that this obviously doesn't happen again. So protecting your identity, ways you can do that, as we said, burn or shred personal financial information. Check your personal credit with Equifax and TransUnion every 5 years, and confirm your credit is yours. You know, I've failed to do that, to be honest, especially with the two young ones now. It feels like life is going by 100 miles an hour. This might be an exercise you want to do, but just overall awareness of your financial transactions, right? If you use a credit card and all of a sudden, you know, if you don't check it monthly, all the details of what you spent, but all of a sudden it's super higher than usual. Again, if you start receiving odd mail from banks that you've never associated with, those should all be things that you should pay attention to. And again, in order to determine whether or not your identity was stolen and perhaps fake bank accounts were created under your name. Put an alert on your credit cards. I've reached out to my credit card a couple of times, especially when I was going out to travel, and they've developed newer technologies now where they'll flag anomalies and your transactions and stuff, right? So do inquire with your financial institution if you are curious and if this is something you're considering. But again, if you're, you know, buying a coffee at Tim Hortons in Ottawa at, you know, this evening, and 20 minutes later you're, you know, buying, you know, a case of beer in Florida, then for sure, based on the technology that exists now, that should raise an alert on your credit card, and you should be getting a phone call with, you know, again, some questions to answer, and kind of those, that cautious route being used. And again, if you're filling in any ballot, there are legitimate contests out there. You know, businesses that want to draw more clients that say, yeah, put in your name, phone number, and you can win this prize basket or whatever. So might be legitimate, but again, if there's too much information being asked or very personal information, again, question yourself as to where that information is going and what's the potential of it being used by, you know, by somebody who should not be using it, essentially. So these are a couple of numbers of those institutions that I talked about to check on your credit. Obviously, easily findable online, although I remember Chris said that this presentation would be shared. Equifax is the package that Desjardins offered. So I've had an Equifax account created, and for the first 5 years or so, They give monthly reviews about, you know, everything's good, no issues, everything else. So I gave this presentation, like I said, a month or two ago. I was saying, like, I was saying I need to think about when this membership that Desjardins offered me with Equifax comes to an end, because my kind of fear is that it was advertised so broadly that this is what Desjardins was offering, that what would say that the fraudsters would not be sitting on my information until they know that this Equifax thing is expired, and then they start hitting me and other victims, right? So that's something that I have on my very long to-do list to look into. So I'll see about that, and hopefully I don't become a victim of that identity theft, essentially, that you know, I was advised by Desjardins that I was a victim of. So coming to a close here on the presentation, folks, and I definitely see the chat that's popping, so I'm eager to see the comments and the questions. So the sending money internationally, so that would be a case of a romance scam, as I mentioned. Just be wary of that. If you do have a relative overseas and you know them and they've given you their financial account, and you want to help them by sending them money, that's obviously fine. It happens a lot, but just be wary of, again, a stranger or somebody that you've recently met asking for that type of thing. The winning of lottery, cruises, or anything that you haven't participated in the draw should definitely be a red flag. The concept of paying taxes or receiving refunds, you have credit cards and gift cards. Again, a reminder that's for it to be untraceable. That should be another red flag. iTunes cards, gift cards. We never see any professional or formal institutions such as a bank or the CRA ever ask for that. And then the receiving of commercial or international checks as a payment. So again, I did allude to that there's this document that you can get from the bank, which is a stamped check from the bank, authentifying that the person purchasing something has those funds in their account. But any type of very uncommon check for a payment should kind of be questioned, and an alternative payment method should be requested by you as a seller if you do sell an item. Some resources that we have, which one is it? I believe it's on the Competition Bureau. So, again, you'll have that in the package. The reason why I'm talking about the Competition Bureau is that next slide is about reporting. So those random phone calls from an automated machine, the emails you receive, the list goes on about all the frauds, right? There perhaps was a time where auto police would accept all reports, but we've reached a point where it would be overwhelming to take all attempt fraud reports. So only a concluded fraud where you're a victim, where you've lost something, would be taken by the auto police service. And again, the reason for that is that those attempts, again, the kind of more international one, like the phone calls and the emails, there's very low solvency factor. And although one would report an attempt theft on the vehicle or whatever, because we don't see as many incidents of it. Again, for an attempt fraud, we cannot afford to do that. But that being said, excuse me, if there is something you're like, oh, I never received this email, this is kind of weird. I believe it is on the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. You can go and you can report your fraud there. So it is not for it to be investigated per se in terms of charges, but it is for it to be listed and then perhaps kind of compared with others. And then if it becomes a trend, then the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center would advertise it as a prevention that people should be careful about a specific fraud. And then they'll have a way of flushing it out to the law enforcement agencies so that they can do their messaging as well and everything else, right? So kind of the two reporting mechanisms. A little bit more about auto police. In most cases, a fraud would be a non-emergency call. Again, this contractor, you've given them money. It's been a week. They haven't come back. You're like, I lost money. I was a victim of a fraud, right? So the non-emergency number should be called. There's also a way that you can report this online, ottawapolice.ca. And then, an investigator will handle your file, look into it, again, check the solvency factors and things like that. So the door-to-door, the exchange with a certain person, those are more tangible. They're, I wouldn't say easier, they're oftentimes complicated, but it's more realistic to consider charges, the suspect being identified and charges being allayed. And those international emails, phone calls from a number with an unknown area code and things like that, they can be reported, but unfortunately those files will usually be closed pretty quickly because we do not have the resources to investigate these crimes, which are essentially international. That being said, your bank, if your identity was stolen, your bank, all of your agencies that you work with might request a police report number. So you're essentially doing it only for the report, for the statistics as well. But again, never hesitate to either make that phone call or go online and report. And the 911 is obviously for any emergency. So if you do have a super insistent alleged charity representative person that are almost forcing their way into your home, if you do have an angry, contractor, whether it be legitimate or illegitimate, that is starting to other threats, accusing violence and things of that nature. Very uncommon that it does happen, but I just don't want you folks to leave this presentation thinking that, all frauds are non-emergency number, because again, there are some that start as a fraud, but escalate to something that's a little higher. So anytime you feel that your personal safety is at risk, that there's any threat to yourself or to others, 911 can and should be called. So again, yeah, they won't stop till you stop. If you present yourself as a victim, and again, you start sending them money, they're just gonna keep on going, right? They unfortunately have nothing better to do. So maybe, Chris, we could do the, or try to do, I don't know why we would have an issue, this funny video of a very unfunny subject, about 4 or 5 minutes, and then we could take, this will give me a time to go through the chat, and then
that
we can
great.
Have a discussion. Are you still seeing this?
We're not seeing the video.
Okay. Stand by. New share. How about now?
Yep. Now we're seeing your browser. Yep.
Perfect. There we go.
Good. If this has sound with it, we're not hearing any sound yet.
It does have sound. What can we do here? Stand by. Oh, share sound.
Well, it's senior,
sound?
Don't
there
you,
you
know?
There.
Okay, let's restart this. And it says senior here, folks. It's not, you know, meant to label everybody on this group as senior. Just to see that possibly really.
Scams, wow, yes. I'm talking scams, cons, frauds, ripoffs. And do you know who the victim, the mark, the sucker is most likely these days? Well, it's seniors, don't you know? Why? Well, you're all sitting there with pots of money from a lifetime of hard work, right? Sometimes on your own, tend to trust people. Nothing wrong with that, eh? Except it's like you got a giant bullseye on your back that tells a scam artist just where to throw his next pitch.
We're just seeing a black screen now.
Good morning, ma'am. Listen, our trucks are in your neighborhood today, and I noticed that your driveway's in pretty rough shape. Now, it cost me money to go back to the yard with a half load, so I can actually do your driveway today for less than half of what you'd pay if you called me through head office. So what do you say? It's $1,200 for a job that I never do for less than $2,800, but the thing is, I got to start today because my truck's already here. Oh, yeah, all we're guaranteed unconditionally. All right, so all you need is a check, and we'll be starting in about an hour as soon as we finish up at your neighbor's place. All right, here's my card. Yeah, I'll wait right here for the check. No problem. Check, cashed within 10 minutes. The truck, what truck, and the telephone number on the card, out of service. Okay, I hear you. You'd never fall for that. Besides, you live in an apartment now. No driveway, no need for new windows or a new roof. No way. But what about this? Hello, is this the Duquesne residence? Perfect. And would you be Mr. Arthur Duquesne? Well, today is your lucky day, sir. My name is Simon, and I'm general manager here at Lucky Travel Promotions, and I am pleased to inform you that you are the grand prize winner of a 12-day, all-inclusive luxury cruise to the Caribbean. Now, how does that sound? I know, you're speechless. Now, who would you like to accompany you on this trip of a lifetime? My deepest sympathies, Mr. Duquesne, but I'm sure she would have wanted you to experience this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Of course, your sister is more than welcome as your guest. You can give her information to my secretary when she phones tomorrow with all the, you know, little details. Now, the last thing we need to do to secure this amazing trip for you is to deal with the federal and excise taxes, which, by law, cannot be part of the prize structure. Now, the total for this is $3,688, and you can pay by Visa or MasterCard. Well, unfortunately, Mr. Duquesne, Lucky Travel Promotions requires me to get the taxes paid up front, or else I'm obliged to offer this trip to the runner-up. But when you think of the value of a 12-day all-inclusive cruise, I'm talking about entertainment, I'm talking about meals, I'm talking about Antigua, Martinique, St. Lucia. It's out of this world, believe me. Well, all right then. It's great to have you aboard, Mr. Duquesne. Now, could I just get that credit card number from you? Great. Who knew free could be so expensive? How does that saying go? If it sounds too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. And here's the latest in my personal favorite scam. Check this out. Hello? Hello, Grandma? It's me. Your grandson, who do you think? Yeah, Alex. It's Alex. Listen, I'm in a bit of trouble. I can't talk long. I'm in a police station, Graham. No. It's nothing too bad. I just got in a car accident, but they're maybe charging me with careless driving, and they said unless I can pay for the damages, they're going to put me in jail. No, you can't call my parents. Please don't. You know, they'll totally freak. This has got to be, you know, our secret, see? I just need a bit of cash so I can pay for the damages, and I got to pay for my lawyer so he can get me bailed out. Or, I mean, this cop, he said he's going to throw me in jail. I'm scared, Gran. I don't want to go to jail. I just need a bit of cash, $4,800 for the car and $500 for the bail. That's it. And, you know, I'll pay you back as soon as I can. I promise. You got to do this for me, Gran. Please? Thank you so much. I love you. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm just going to pass you to my lawyer, okay? He's just going to let you know how to wire me the money. Oh, you're saving my life. Thanks, Gran. What wouldn't we do for family? Even if they're not really family. Bottom line is, know the facts before you part with your cash, because there's a lot of fast-talking scammers out there that think that senior is just another word for sucker. See you next time.
He's a much better actor than I am, isn't he? So that was it, folks, for the presentation. Chris, when you said that it went dark, is when I opened the chat. So
okay.
I quickly went back to the video. So I saw some very quickly. I saw some interesting anecdotes. And again, this is this is meant to be a very interactive presentation at this point. And I think I have my information that I present to you, but I think that there's a lot of a lot of benefit again to these anecdotes to share and to bring awareness. So, until what time is this group scheduled to go, Chris? Was it 9?
Yeah, we run until 9. Yep.
Yeah. So I can try to multitask and kind of keep an eye on the go through the chat as Chris might want to see if there are any hands up or people that want to talk directly on the screen.
Okay, I can pick out a couple of things that I saw as going by. First thing I'm going to do is I can't unmute everybody, but what I can do is mute all and change it so that participants can unmute themselves. So, Seb, you'll have to unmute yourself as well right now. So anybody who wants to, you can unmute yourself and, ask a question audibly. I'll go through some of the things that I noticed in here that were, I thought, interesting things. So let's just see, going back here. Just a note from Alan that we do maintain a Fraud Watch page on our website. So it has a bunch of information about various frauds as well as some links to other sites with more information and how to protect yourself and so forth. Tom made a note that checks may appear to be certified, but they're actually fake. So I guess you have to really watch out for that to make sure it truly is a certified check. Alan made a note saying that hyperlinks that are displayed in an email or whatever may be different from the address it's actually pointing to. And if you hover your mouse over the link, you get a tooltip pop-up that has the actual real address linked in, so that can help you to identify things that people are trying to trick you. Seb mentioned about the Ottawa Police having a safe trade zone. I pasted the URL to that into the chat, so you can pick that up there. Natalie said, or meet at a public parking lot or location. I would say Personally, I think the things set up by the Ottawa police are probably the best ones to go for sure. Let's just see, pick up some of those. There's a bunch of comment stuff in there, so people should review the chat afterwards as well. Answering
phone
calls.
Just to interrupt there, Chris, I'm also going through it. Harvey's intervention about the Google for search of services, and I realize that obviously there needs to be a bit of triage when you're looking up your information. A bit of a personal anecdote, that wasn't a fraud, but this was just a very, how do you say? Anyways, I essentially paid twice as much for tickets to a monster truck show to bring my son than I should have. I believe something had happened with my daughter. I spent all day at the hospital. I knew my son wanted to go see monster trucks. I'm like, okay, it's late, whatever, I'm doing this. Ended up on this website, which was an American resale website, whatever. I got the tickets. We got a good show, but it cost me twice as much that it would have with Ticketmaster. So didn't lose any money. Well, you know, lost money in a way, but obviously the whole site was very legitimate and there was no ill intent there. But to Harvey's point, absolutely. Even if you do go through Google, you know, just ensure that you don't get that, you know, people can pay extra to get an advertisement and get at the top of the list. So I appreciate that comment there, sir.
Corrine had a question. She said, when you go to get cash from a bank, will the bank ask questions? And do you know if this is the banks are being more forthright in that or forthcoming and trying to make sure that people are not being victims of fraud?
Great question. And actually, another personal anecdote, my nephew works in a bank in Gatineau, and he was telling us at our last family function how they the staff essentially identified that there was a vulnerability in their client, either by way of repeated withdrawals or a large amount of money. They essentially engaged in a conversation. I feel that as a client, you could tell your bank, you know, none of your business, give me the money and, you know, I am who I am kind of thing. But, through proper PR and customer service, they got talking to this elderly gentleman, and yeah, they flagged it as this person is going to lose a lot of money if we don't stop it right now. Obviously in that case, you know, there'd be the whole possibly in terms of, support services, from the Gatineau police that would have been called, I don't have the whole story, but perhaps the client just kind of realized that, you know, he needed to stop, what they were doing. So, definitely for large amounts, I would hope, but again, that's based on the individual's, cashier's kind of training perspective, perhaps even some bank policies and stuff like that. So, I can confirm that it does happen, but I cannot assure you that it happens everywhere.
Yeah. Corrine made a comment saying that now you can put a hold on your credit card through a mobile app. So that's good if you think that there's something that has been compromised. I also, I think most of the credit cards and banks now allow you to put where you'll get an alert when there's any transaction going on. And I've done it on my bank account. If there is more than $1 withdrawn from my bank account, I will get an email immediately on it. So that, although you're likely to find out after a fraud has occurred, at least you can react to it immediately. And I've done the same with my credit card so that if there's any transaction on my credit card over $1, I will get a text message immediately on that, or usually within 5 minutes. So that can help me to react to any fraud that is going on.
Yeah. Chris, Carol's raised her hand here.
Oh, okay, Carol.
Hi. I have heard that, like, if you answer the phone, there's people who are recording your voice and using that as some sort of a scam. Is that true? Is that an actual thing?
I've also heard of that, I would say anecdotally, and hence why I am a chicken and I will never play the game that some of my colleagues play to go along and answer questions. I would strongly suggest to the people on this call that as soon as you know that it's an attempt fraud, yes, do hang up. I cannot confirm that it does exist. It wouldn't surprise me if it doesn't. Somebody is already working on it. Get your yes, get your no, get your, you know, whatever they need to reproduce. Most of you folks are probably familiar with the progresses of artificial intelligence. You know, this simple video here could be reused and somebody could make me say, you know, whatever, right? So, again, it could, but using caution and not even being polite, not even like entertaining these people with a courteous, you know, thank you, good night. Just you turn off the phone, you put an end to the conversation, I would say is your best defense for sure.
One of the things that I've done on that front is I used to entertain all of these scam calls and everything like that all the time, and it was very annoying. Then I stopped answering my phone, and I put my voice message just saying that due to the number of scam and spam calls, I don't answer my phone. And if you're not a scammer or a spammer, leave a message in your phone number, and if I believe you, I'll call you back. And the scammers never leave a message.
No, surprising, eh? Yeah, no, that's great. And I, as most probably do with the cell phones, have pretty much anybody that wants to reach me as a contact. So, even I'll surprise myself sometimes, you know, missing a call from a number that I don't recognize, but, same rationale, kind of prefer, filtering the voicemail. One of my friends actually has an interesting feature. I forget who he's with, but it's kind of annoying when you're driving and you're calling him with there's a voice activation, because then it says, you've reached, Bruno. Bruno has this feature. If you are, a legitimate person, press whatever number, right? So I gotta drive and I gotta hit my screen there, and this, you know, it's a quick, you know, pressing a button, but this is a police officer telling you that I'm pressing my phone, but, anyways, just annoyed by it, but, he's a very, he's a police officer as well. He's like super by the book and very cautious. So anyways, good on him for doing that, but same kind of thing, right? Whatever prevention mechanism that you're comfortable with, definitely don't hesitate to do it. And again, the being polite to these people is, they don't deserve that. So go ahead and do what you need to do to protect yourself.
That's for sure. Natalie had a comment saying that her insurance company offers coverage for identity theft. Do you have any thoughts on advice on that? Has it proved useful for people or anything like
that? It's a good question. I mean, I think these types of insurances and then, packages and, is up to everybody's kind of personal level of comfort. There's always, fine print that is so long that I seldom have the patience to read it. But definitely if you believe in the legitimacy of the service that is offered, and it's an extra, $5, $10, $15 a month, can definitely bring peace of mind. I'm not losing sleep over the whole Desjardins, identity theft, but I will say that I sporadically think about it and it is a bit of a concern for me. Saw a couple of other remarks about other, Queenswood Carlton, and anybody that has private information and that has an employee with bad intentions can be at risk, right? So we can't stop living for that. And at the end of the day, we live in a world where, our financial institutions, the Queenswood Carlton Hospital, those people need our information, right? So, again, in terms of a coverage, I wouldn't see why not, if you're comfortable financially to absorb that, perhaps extra amount. And for sure, if it's offered for free, go right ahead and take it if it's from an institution that you trust, such as is the case for this.
Yeah. Karen has a question. Are there advances in AI, artificial intelligence, introducing new things that we need to be aware of?
Good question. In the example that I gave, obviously as a joke, virtual meeting, I haven't heard of anything. There are so many lower effort scams that will get a lot of victims. Like, it's very unfortunate to say that, but all those scam examples that I gave you, there's probably a couple that surprise you, and it, kind of like that video at the end that you said to yourself, well, I'll never fall victim to that. But again, there's regularly people that fall victim to that, right? So, albeit people that work in the AI field are getting so comfortable that it might not be much of an effort for them, but I couldn't think, in terms of reproducing faces or voices, of the necessity for these people to invest effort in that, where there are all the other mechanisms that are a lot easier. So, long answer to say that I'm not familiar with with one specifically right now, but again, with the advances of that technology and sky is the limit, again, we should always, the big takeaway is when the contact is initiated by somebody else who alleges to be whoever, whatever, by way of voice, video, mail, or whatever, if your gut feeling tells you that there's something off, if you did not initiate the exchange, then by all means, you know, terminate that exchange and restart it with you yourself making that contact with a phone number or an email or even, you know, walking into the bank. I'm going to go do the groceries. I'm going to detour into RBC. I'm going to say, hey, I got to speak to the manager here. This happened this morning. Does Joe work here? Because allegedly this happened. No, sir. No, ma'am. We've heard of it. They might have even, you know, and they might have already had other clients and they might reassure you right away. There's a scam going on. You know, thank you for doing the right thing and everything else. So, yeah, that's it. Again, long answer for, I don't know.
Oh, that's great. Jocelyn, I had a question. What can be done if movers, tow truck, other blackmailers blackmail you to pay more to get your stuff? I heard about this on Marketplace where you contract movers and it's $600 and then you get to the destination and they say, well, you got to pay $1,200 and you're not getting your stuff. Will the police intervene if you're in such a situation? What can be done after you paid them? Is law enforcement progressing to block that?
Very interesting. I do feel that in my career I might have had a similar case, call us and you know, case by case basis. I cannot sit here and tell you yes for sure, no. This, in my opinion, would not necessarily constitute a fraud, but more of a civil dispute. I would argue that if you are contracting such services, obviously hire a reliable company, have a contract written, you know, set parameters, no surprises. And then if you can present that document in civil court, then you can get, you know, you can get found as being the person that, you know, is telling the truth, essentially. Unfortunately, when it comes to policing, we have too many cases where we wish we could do more for the, you know, I'll call them victims of the civil dispute. But when we identify that it's a civil matter, we can try to negotiate as much as we want with the person that's perceived as, you know, being wrong in the case, such as the example here would be the movers. But ultimately, you know, there's nothing enabling us to force our way into the storage or whatever. That being said, based on officers' experience, background, you know, even case law in some cases, you know, we have been known to be creative in the past and articulate ways and or, you know, convince the wrongdoers that it's in their best interest to cooperate and proceed. But again, the short answer for this would be that I'm perceiving this as a civil dispute. And then you need to consider, right, is there maybe a minimal percentage of legitimacy in what they're asking? Do I really want to argue and go to court and, you know, what could take up to 6 months, a year and a half? Or do I just want to absorb this as a, special tax or whatever they call it and say, okay, here's my stuff, here's your money, we're good to go, right? So hard to absorb as a victim of this situation because definitely you're like, no, I know I'm right, they're wrong, they have my stuff. I don't want to give them more money. Police are going to help me. But just unfortunately expect that the officer would show up and you know, pretty much educate you or the person involved in the same fashion that I just did, which sucks because, again, we find ourselves in so many situations that we really would want to, you know, get in there, get the stuff back and be of greater assistance. But the law is the law.
All right. Natalie asks, if we want to recommend this presentation to another group, what's the process? Do you want to give your contact information into the chat or do you want them to come through me or?
No, I can take the pressure off of you, Chris, and I will, I will gladly, share my email. What I said initially is genuine. I do believe in what I do and I do believe in prevention being the best tool. I have colleagues, just so you know, that mock me and say, you know, you haven't made an arrest all year. What good are you, you know, bringing to this city? And I'm thinking, hey, I don't need to make arrests because I probably prevented, you know, more crimes than I can count, right?
So exactly.
That's what set you with my position is that, oh, sorry, I just, for some reason, shared it directly with Evelyn there. I'll get back to the, okay. everyone in meeting and reshare. But, yeah, again, you know, there's no, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't say, you know, Chris is going to be a victim in 2 weeks. Carol is going to be a victim tomorrow and kind of do that prevention, right? But by doing these presentations with which myself and my fellow community officers do citywide, I really feel that that's the best approach. And don't worry. I push back to those colleagues that mock me for not making any arrests. I just say I'm too busy preventing crime instead of fighting it, right?
That's right. Karen asks, can you clarify if it's a crime to call and solicit if a person is on the no-call list?
Ooh, good question. I would say not a crime, but I could not answer and say which. I mean, I think it's one of those things, the no-call list, which is, and I've heard about it, probably some of you folks are better aware of what it entails. Again, I think it's more of a kind of a civil contract or a way of, you know, saying I don't want you, but again, so many companies out there, so many scammers, you know, they unfortunately don't care, and that no-call list is not something, unfortunately, that we could that we could enforce. It's a quick, you know, either don't recognize the number, don't pick up. If it's on your cell phone, if you have the blocking the phone number feature, that's definitely something that I would recommend as well. They have systems where they'll find another number to use and continue calling regardless. I feel bad for folks with landlines. We've personally moved to cell phones only, and that's one of the advantages is that I don't get bothered with that phone call at 5:30 p.m. when we're having dinner about, you know, whatever, whether it be legitimate or not. Again, a long answer to say that there's no police enforceable statutes or laws in regards to a breach of that no-call list.
Yeah, the Bob Walker commented. He says the don't call list is the scammer's phone book. It could well be the case.
Yeah,
I think I covered most of the questions that are in there. As I said, there's lots of comments, so I do encourage people to visit the chat once it gets posted on our website. If there's something that I missed and didn't cover, or if you have an additional question, by all means, you could add it into the chat now or unmute yourself and ask audibly.
Can I ask something?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So I was just wondering, is there a specific number of, I don't know, reports of a specific, you know, scam or a time frame for it to be made public? Because I did have a friend who she was frauded, you know, whatever, defrauded. And later on, like a month and a half later, the police made it public through the news that, you know, this was happening. And I thought, well, if she had known about that, maybe she could have avoided it. And I was just wondering, like, is there, I don't know, a threshold for it to be made public?
I would, that's a good question and absolutely something that we as a police service consider. Again, getting back to that concept of prevention, I would only say, in regards to our caseloads, in regards to our processes, in regards to a certain need to perhaps accumulate a couple of files in order to determine that there is a pattern and that there's a continued threat, I would say those might be the arguments why there was a delay. Obviously some of those reports might come in a blast, and like all of a sudden we know that, okay, you know, 5, 6, 7 people on one day have been done in one neighborhood, and then the next day, and then, you know, so you get kind of that repeated occurrence that you're like, okay, we need to get that media release out soon. So not knowing all the details about your friend, I would just speculate that perhaps they received one, you know, this first week, and then one or two the next week. And again, it is unfortunate. But that would kind of be the perspective that I would share in regards to that that question.
Thanks.
Hey, is anybody else who would like to unmute themselves?
Maureen, has her hand up. I can see her.
Go ahead.
I had a situation recently where a friend of mine was visiting from the States, and we were at IKEA, and she had her wallet stolen. Mm-hmm. After we left IKEA and we were heading off to another store, she got an alert from the World Bank saying that a couple of transactions had gone through in the same amount for her credit card. We didn't think anything of it at the time until we got to the next store and she went to buy something and realized she didn't have her wallet. The first thing we did was turn around, head straight to the World Bank, confirmed that five things had gone through for the same amount. We knew where it had taken place, so we showed up at the rec hall over at College Square. We spoke to the manager. We got it on film of the guy, and she had described to him what the guy looked like who stole her wallet because he was quite pushy to her, and that's why she remembered him. And we got the guy on tape. He confirmed that, yes, that was the guy that was there. And yet when we called the police and we told the police to go to that location, they never followed up on it.
So which location? The Rexall?
The Rexall, where it was on film at the exact time that we were getting notices from the RBC saying that these were going through account. He bought all gift cards.
Gotcha. Yeah, for the untraceability of those.
Exactly. And so, even the girl at the stop remembers because they kept patting it. And then when it didn't work anymore, because obviously the Royal Bank put a stop on it, then she said, right. Oh, hang on, I'll use this. And yet it was all on film. The manager confirmed with us that it was the guy that she said, described, that had bumped into her. And yet when we called the police and then we tried to go to the police station the next day over on Rotorua, and you can't get into the police station. And they tried to fill out the online form, but they live down in the States. So they never heard anything back from it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that detail that you shared initially. I'll gladly break that down for you, Maureen. It's it is unfortunate. I personally would sincerely wish that we could dispatch officers to all calls.
We had them on tape.
I'm sorry?
We had them on tape.
Yeah. And that's why we probably have a couple of missing pieces in this story. I will just tell you how this should have unfolded. And these stolen credit cards being used, I see broadcasts daily of the fraud section saying, please help identify this individual. Background is the simple offense of using the card, even though the theft was committed, the offense of using the card is the fraud and is what needs to be focused on, right? So, again, very unfortunate that your friends have gone back to the States. In a perfect world, there could still be the potential of a communication with the investigator. This broadcast should have been issued. If there was a breakdown in the Congress in the communication, that's very unfortunate, but it's unfortunately not uncommon. As a community officer, I get this type of feedback from community members saying, this happened, I never heard back from the officer. I submitted this report, what's up? Then I look up, I even punch in with the section investigating, or like Seb, we're backlogged 200 files, right? So it is unfortunate, and that's kind of almost the same explanation for that police station that you found to be closed, right? We've run into, we have a couple of minutes left, for me to climb on my soapbox here, but we've been dealing with staffing issues for the past several years, and this type of service delivery, in my opinion, is unacceptable. The chief has announced.
I was told by other people you can't get into any Ottawa police station.
Oh, well, that would be false. The Elgin station, the Huntmar station, and the 10th Line station, they have their hours of operation. So it's not 24/7, but it's within regular business hours. So all that to say that, again, the non-officer being dispatched, staffing issue. We don't have enough officers to dispatch. The no follow-up to your friends, staffing issue. The detectives are probably overwhelmed. And the no officer at the police station, staffing issue. We can't open the station, right? So very unfortunate. Like I said, in a perfect world, that card is used, that report is submitted, that check mark saying there is video available. We have it. The business has it. It is checked. The follow-up is made. The broadcast is sent. Very good potential of an officer. We have 1,400 members citywide in all the sections. Very good potential that somebody recognizes this person or that they get caught red-handed in another situation. So, I appreciate your question and this scenario, Maureen. It's unfortunately not uncommon. But hopefully my answer addresses some of the concerns, even though it's not not necessarily positive, right?
Yeah.
Karen has her hand raised. Karen?
Hello. I was going to say thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. And I was going to add a little bit of a wrinkle to sort of your grandparent scam, is that a friend of mine had it happen at work where he received an email and it was supposedly coming from his boss, and his boss was asking him to go out and buy gift cards for, I've forgotten what the reason was. So my friend went out and used the company credit card to buy these gift cards that were supposed to be electronic and sent off, which he did, and it ended up being a scam. So that's a slight new wrinkle, because they had researched my friend's boss, provided all the sort of facts that he would need to say that it was legitimately his boss. And I'd not heard of that scam before, so that was kind of an interesting wrinkle on sort of the grandparent scam.
Wow. Yes, thanks for sharing that. And absolutely, just goes to show that, you know, and I don't know the circumstances of your friend and their workplace, you know, whether this type of request is common or not. But if it isn't, this should definitely trigger boss. Like, is this email from you? Like, what's going on? You know, why are we doing this? Or, you know, if it's not appropriate to question, just kind of confirm, is this a genuine request, right? But, you know, like I've been saying, sky's the limit for these people. All they have to do is to think about these new scams. You know, what you shared is fairly unique. I haven't heard about it before, but again, not impossible. Obviously not impossible. It happened. I'm not denying it. Yeah, they'll come up with pretty creative stuff. Let's just put it that way.
Hey, do we have any other final questions or comments?
I want to make a little follow-up on the mover questions. If they come and they charge, let's say, double of the price at the beginning and leave with your stuff, is that considered stealing your stuff? And okay, that's it.
No, great question, Jocelyn, and that was kind of the nuance, the gray zone, the articulating, the everything else, right? Like we sometimes have powers that we really need to think hard before enforcing. If you can read between the lines here, there's officer experience, there's case law. I'm understanding that this is perhaps a personal situation to you, so I don't want you leaving here, you know, by saying, you know, Seb LeMay said this, because again, it's a gray zone, essentially. I'll just put it that way. And, you know, how you just presented your situation is totally the way that I would perceive it as a police officer, as an individual, and the way that I would wish to enforce it. But again, based on, you know, it's pretty clear the way you're putting it. All that to say is that I would definitely, you know, if I was a responding officer, touch base with a colleague, probably have even a sergeant come over and say, okay, we have this situation. I'm thinking theft. I'm thinking, you know, mischief or different other kind of criminal code offenses. How do we approach this? Can we approach this? And again, based on experience, you know, similar cases that have been kind of dealt with before, it would need to be evaluated. So I'm not saying it's impossible. It's a definitive no, but I'm not saying it's a definitive yes as well. It's just, you know, one of those situations where all the officers on scene, if there are more than one, need to kind of put their heads together and figure it out. Definitely, it's not unique. Like I said, 15 years of doing this job, and I do recall one or two similar situations. I cannot remember what the outcome was. But the first thing to say would be yes, call police, and then we'll figure it out, or we'll try to figure it out, or, you know, have everybody leave the situation with the desired, or have you as the, again, victim, leave with the desired outcome would definitely be our hope. Yes, Marie?
I just want to ask, if you're on the 417 and you have a car accident, can you insist that CAA, which I am a member of, that they pick up my car and not deal with those other harassments that are coming from all the other tow drivers?
Yes, I believe so. That is a field on which I have been less involved, being a community officer for 7 years, but there are new laws out there. And again, those would be on our website, I feel, because there's been a lot of energy, for, against, whatever. I know exactly what you're alluding to.
Yeah, they're pretty pushy.
Yeah. The only, if you take the example of the 417 exactly, and yeah. I mean, your circumstance could apply anywhere, but there's a notion of impeding traffic and whether or not the CAA is going to respond quickly, right? So
yeah.
You might have a police officer saying, we have contracted tows. So the Ottawa Police Service, puts out a proposal, and then the tow truck companies, they apply. So if your vehicle is blocking the road, a CAA is saying we'll be there in half an hour, but we need it moved in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then we make that request for you, but then, in terms of the billing and everything else, it goes back to you and or your insurance. But, I know though that could be, if I was more knowledgeable and I could actually maybe perhaps even find a presentation, that could be a whole different hour of talking about the tow truck industry and how you have rights, we have rights as drivers, and then that bullying and that's been happening, and it's very, very unfortunate.
Yeah.
I believe the Ontario government just brought in new rules on, in effect, January 1st for tow truck operators.
Yes, and that might be one of the numerous emails that I have on my to-do list to brush up on and read. I appreciate my colleagues that put the Coles notes, and you're like, okay, 2-3 lines, I'm good. But that might have been a memo from Solicitor General or MTO or whatever, and it's I'm a little overwhelmed when I click on that PDF and it has more than 2 pages. I much rather focus on preparing a presentation such as this one, but here Maureen is with her question, so I guess I'll read the memo for next presentation.
Natalie, did you put your hand up new?
Yeah, it was actually in response to this. So
okay.
I had a situation where there was a snowstorm, came out of the blue. I went into a ditch, called CAA, and I was waiting there, and another tow truck came and said, I'm here to take you out of the ditch. And I said, no, you're not touching my car. He said, the police send us. And I didn't believe them, but then a police officer came and said, this is not safe. I want you out of here ASAP. So I allowed the tow truck to pull me out. And then what happened was I called CAA, and they reimbursed me for the amount that they would have, their regular charge that the other tow truck had charged me. So I was reimbursed by CAA.
Nice.
I don't know if that's still the case, but yeah. But I had
ultimately, was there a genuine relationship between, the police did not request that tow truck. Tow truck arrived first, right?
No, actually, that's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
No, because the tow truck guy said the police had told them to take me out, and I didn't believe them, but that was actually the case. So somebody driving on the highway had reported me in the ditch. They
gotcha.
Called police, I guess.
Yeah.
And so they called a tow truck, but I didn't believe them, but it was, yeah.
No, good thing to share with the CAA and any other roadside coverage that you might have. I would just argue that they probably have a list of approved ones. So if you have the time and whether it be a snowstorm and you're not out in the elements, but, maybe call CA just because this is actually, this will happen, but just to make sure, just maybe call back and say, okay, I have Bob Stowing here. They're offering to take me. Will you reimburse? Is this part of my coverage? And then just kind of get that confirmation. I think you were lucky. That was good and convenient that happened. And that they refunded you. But, I could just see that they would say, no, they're not on our list. And, you have to pay for yourself or whatever. Right. So.
Yeah, Harvey just pasted in some stuff, I assume, from the CAA, saying CAA will make an effort to accommodate the towing of the vehicle under certain circumstances. Police may require that the vehicle be removed immediately by an independent towing company. I would certainly not argue with the police if the police said, no, you're getting towed by this company right now.
Yeah, that was the case with me. And so, I mean, it wasn't a matter of getting reimbursed. It was a matter of me saying, okay, and the police officer had me in their vehicle while it was, my car was being dragged out of the ditch. So it's not like I had a choice. But luckily I was reimbursed. I don't think CAA would refuse if the police are telling me that I have to allow this tow truck to take my car out.
Exactly. Okay, I think we are well past the 9 o'clock, so I think I'm going to call it to a close at this point. You do have Seb's email address. If you have any other burning questions, I'm sure that you can send them in to him. Do look for the presentation file as well as the audio track and the contents of the chat window on our website within a couple of days. With that, I would like to thank Seb for a very excellent presentation. I think we had great attendance, great questions, great comments, a good sharing of information. I really do appreciate that the Ottawa Police Service does see fit to put resources like this in place so that we can educate the public, and the more we can do to ensure that people are informed of scams that are out there and what to do about them to avoid them and what to do if you happen to become a victim can only help everybody. And so my great thanks to Seb for an excellent presentation.
Thank you very much, everybody. I was just brushing up on the chat, so thanks for all the comments and the applause. And like I said, be ambassadors, spread the word, prevention is the key, and reporting as well, right? No crime is too small. You know, even if it's just for a, you know, recording of the event or, you know, getting it in our database, links can be made. And, again, please report and, spread the word.
That's great. Thanks. If you can send me the presentation either as a PowerPoint file or a PDF, whatever is easiest for you, and I can get that posted on our website. So that'd be much appreciated.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, folks. Good night, and we will see you next week at Q&A. And I can tell you I've got a follow-up to a fraud where a security professional actually fell for a fraud. So it can happen to anybody. Don't be ashamed if it did happen to you at all. Be forewarned and be careful. And hopefully this presentation will help keep people safe on the Internet. Good night, all.